All right, good to see everybody here tonight. Hope you all are having a good week so far. We are going to wrap this study up tonight that we've been doing, and I don't know about you guys, but I personally have enjoyed it. I hope it's been helpful to you and insightful, let's say. Get all my paperwork straightened out here. Okay, so we've been looking at these objections to intelligent design, theism, however you want to say it. And tonight we're going to look at the last two. But I want to start off by showing you an image. Because one of the things that we've talked about is origins. The origin of life, the origin of everything. I mean, the origin of matter itself. And, you know, we are told of common ancestry, aren't we? That we have, that we are related to certain, what is it, mammals, certain living creatures, and we share similar DNA and things of this nature, but that we've all evolved from a common ancestor, essentially. I mentioned Lucy a couple weeks ago, and I shared this in our private Facebook group. Lucy is one of the, what I refer to as evolutionary hoaxes. So on the left-hand side, you see what was actually discovered. You don't know how much hair this thing has. You have a couple pieces of the skull cap. You have part of the lower jawbone. So how do you know what the eyes look like? Or the nostrils, or the, you notice the mouth is kind of protruding, like we, you know, we think of modern day apes and things. They look different upstairs, let's say. Well, how would you, from those six pieces, come up with that skull? I'm asking you. You've got to have an agenda. There's no possible way you can come up with that shaped head and those eyes and nostrils and lips from those six pieces. And then, of course, you've got a few ribs. What is that? One, two, three. Maybe six parts of the vertebrae. Parts of two legs. So how do you know what the feet look like? I mean, you don't have any of the feet. You don't have anything from the hands, maybe a digit or part of a digit. I mean, I just put this up here to show you. This is science. Okay? That's what we're told anyway. This is science. And I know that the image of Lucy on the right is a little bit dark. Darker than it is on this screen anyway, but any thoughts on that? Is it 1st or 2nd Timothy? Science so-called? Yeah. Somebody look that up. False science. It's in one of the Timothys. But then there's another one in the same neighborhood there, Jeff, I think I know where this one is. I think it's in 2 Timothy 2. Those who are ever learning but never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Anyway, somebody has a way to look that up, that'd be great. Yes. Yeah, the stance, you think of a modern modern day chimp, monkey, ape. Their pelvis is totally different than a human pelvis. And the hip joints where they join into the pelvis are at a different location because they've got shorter legs. Most of their weight, most of their load bearing is directly on their knees. Ours is a little to the outside, down the outside of the femur, the outside of the knees. Theirs is like straight down from their hips because they're as I think Brother Bland called them, knuckle draggers. That's what they are. They're made up completely different. So at what point in time and how long did it take for the pelvis to shrink and rotate so that then the angle of the legs and the weight that is borne by the femurs, how long did it take all that to change? And why did it change? So, this is science. Anybody find that? Yes, 1 Timothy. All right, read it. Listen to that. Science which is falsely so called, which some professing have erred from the faith. False knowledge will lead people away from the faith. There's a pretty, so what was that? 1 Timothy 6, 19 through 21? 20 and 21. Okay, so you guys are not unaware, at least I don't think you are, that a lot of our young people leave the faith right after they leave home and go off to college because they're out from under their parents' roof. They're being exposed to things probably they've never been exposed to before. They're being taught things on a higher academic level than they've ever been taught before. And as we've said throughout this class, creationism, intelligent design, is not even an option. Somebody says they have a good imagination. There's no doubt about that. Of course, the same charge is thrown out against us. We have a good imagination too. But when you look at the evidence, well, when you look at what they put forth as evidence for their theories, it's no evidence at all. I can't remember if it was Piltdown Man. There's Lucy, there's Piltdown Man, Australopithecus. I can't remember which one it was, but they formed an entire being out of the top of a skull. That's all they found. And it essentially looks like Lucy. And it's science falsely so called. It's made up. So anyway, anybody want to keep looking at that or should we move along here? Okay, so we're looking at these objections to theism and why this person is an atheist. Here was number 9. Every phenomenon, you know, what is a phenomenon? Remember we defined that last week? Anybody remember? Or phenomenon? It's a fact or an event whose origin is in question. They know it is, they just don't know how it is or why it is. Okay? So every phenomenon that I have ever observed has emerged from necessary and sufficient antecedents over time. An antecedent is a thing that precedes another thing. So, Lucy, we're told, would be our antecedent, essentially. All right? So, every fact, everything that I have ever observed has emerged from necessary and sufficient prior things with over time without exception. In other words, I have never observed a phenomenon that was created ex nihilo. What does that mean? Y'all have heard that one? Ex nihilo? Ex, out of, nihilo, nothing. This is, you know, we don't use that word every day or ever. I have never observed a phenomenon that was created out of nothing. That is, instantaneously came into existence by the solitary volition of a deity. I want to do a couple of things here. A couple highlights. Number one, antecedents. Okay, the things prior to what currently are. Well, in the evolutionary timetable, the Big Bang happened approximately 13.7 billion years ago. You and I are relatively young, approximately 250,000 years old. And we're going to talk about dates, age of the earth, when we get into Genesis starting next week. That's an interesting study to do. But notice, and we've done this with everyone up to this point, I have ever. Well, who's the standard here? How old are you? What have you experienced? What do you know? Those are kind of questions that come into my mind. But then, why even include this part of that statement? Let's read it without that last part. I have never observed a phenomenon that was created out of nothing that instantaneously came into existence. You don't need the last part. Why would you throw that in there? Because God's not an option. Science tells us that if you have nothing, what will you have in 13.7 billion years? You will have nothing. If you start with nothing, you will end with nothing. It takes something to make other things. And so, so we talked about biogenesis, the origins of life, life coming from non-life, sentient, conscious beings coming into existence out of what? Out of matter. And again, to me, that may be the more and more I've studied this, and I've already told you this a couple of times throughout this series, but the more and more I've studied this, to me, consciousness, conscience, may be some of the strongest arguments for the existence of an intelligent designer, intelligent creator, however you want to word that. Because if you have you cut down a tree and you can make stuff, right? You can make tables and chairs and whatever, footstools, whatever the case may be. It will never come to life. It will never be sentient. It'll never be conscious. It'll never have a sense of ought or ought not. It just is. And over time, what will happen to that thing? It's going to go away. It's going to fall apart. That's called entropy. It runs out of energy. It decays. Maybe that's a good word to use. Is Bigfoot the missing link? I don't know about that. All claims of... Okay, so back to this real quick. Any thoughts on this particular point? The first part of that, okay, everything that is... Let's leave out the word phenomena. Everything that is that I have ever observed, listen to this, has emerged from necessary and sufficient antecedents over time without exception. In other words, if something exists, something existed before it that caused it. Isn't that what this person's saying? So, what is that law called? The law of cause and effect. Every effect, every material effect, whatever thing you want to talk about, has something that existed before it and was greater than it. I agree, that's absolutely true. That sounds like that would contradict what he believes. But again, you kind of go into that, what we call the infinite regress. It just continues to go, well, where did that come from? Well, where did that come from? If there's an effect, there has to be a cause. So if you've just got matter, a small amount of matter and chemicals, okay, first of all, where did that small amount of matter and chemicals come from? Because that's what happened 13.7 billion years ago. That's question number one. Where did the matter come from? Question number two, what event or chain of events caused that tiny ball of matter to explode and to expand into the current condition? Was there any antecedent to the tiny ball of matter and energy or to the explosion that caused what we see today? There can't be. Right. There is no evidence. And see, that's the thing, and Timber kind of hits on something there. It's all about scientific method, isn't it? Testability, can we test this in a lab? Can we repeat that test and come up with a consistent result? You know, you have a hypothesis, you have this theory, and you can take that theory into a lab, which to me is kind of funny if you think about it. They want to talk about the origins of life, and they've got living things experimenting with that, which completely blows the theory of organic evolution out of the water. Anyway, you have all of that going on. You have all of these things being taught that contradict the very laws they claim an allegiance to, science. And yet, intelligence and design and function and complexity, it's illogical to believe that there was someone complex and intelligent and functioning that actually brought it into existence. Anyway, anything further on this point number 9? Okay. Yes. Yep. Yes. Order does not come from chaos. You might call it common sense that if you blow something up. Okay. If you're going to build a barn, let's say you order all, you know, your lumber, your hardware, maybe you got to order some special tools, metal roof, whatever. They deliver it all, drop it off in your front yard, and Emily, go get the pyrotechnics. Let's build a barn. You know, let's set this thing off. That's the same. Well, it's been compared to going to a print shop, blowing up a print shop, and a newspaper resulting from that explosion. Yeah. Right. Because if a Big Bang is not an explosion, like you're saying, then what was it? And how did it create order? And not just order, but habitable order. We can live here. And the atmosphere here is perfect. No other planet has the atmosphere that we have. Or the elements that water. Well, we think there may have been water on Mars at one point in time. Yeah, you think a lot of things. But where is it? Right. Well, in the experiments that I've talked about, what are the guys' names? Pasteur, Reedy, the experiments with spontaneous generation proved that from non-life comes non-life. You cannot have life without life that preceded it. I don't know. I think it was Reedy who tested the meats in different containers and no containers, and you know the meat that was sealed, nothing happened because no life was able to penetrate a superficial barrier or no barrier at all. You know, no flies were landing on it, so there were no maggots later. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how many jumps there are, that's a good question. I just don't know the answer to that. But the first jump from non-life to life had to be 100% successful, because any failure, and the whole process starts over. But see, that's the thing. So we talked. Was it last week? God of the gaps. What's the God of the gaps? Y'all remember? Yeah. I don't know what happened, so God did it. Well, what do they use instead of God? Time. That's why it took 13.7 billion years from the Big Bang to where we are now. Because time, natural selection, natural processes, that's the explanation. But I don't know about that original jump from... Yeah, exactly. We refer to the missing link. Where is the link from non-life to life? That's a good question. Time won't do it. You know, anyway. Okay, number 10. All claims of a supernatural or divine nature that I have encountered have either been refuted to my satisfaction, I'm happy the way it got explained away, or do not present as falsifiable. What that last phrase means is, essentially, if you claim God did this, God did this, there's no way to refute that. It's not able to be proven untrue, which makes it untrue. But what do they do with evolution? You can't prove it. There's no evidence of it. There are claims. You have hypotheses. But you can't duplicate it. You can't test it. You don't get different results from the test that you're doing of life coming from non-life, let's say. It presents the same way. Yes. It's just evolution. Yeah. It's no longer a theory, which... You know, a theory, you start out with what you think, and then you test it. You know, you subject it to whatever experiments you think might produce your conclusion. But and that's one of the things we'll get to it in just a minute. You have to allow the evidence to lead you to the proper conclusion. You can't just jump from this is what I think, therefore this is what it is. You have to go through the proper channels to test it. I have a couple thoughts on here. Number one, it's essentially this is what they're saying. Intelligent design cannot be tested, therefore it is not scientific and must be false. Let me ask you a question. Can intelligence be tested? You ever heard of an IQ test? The intelligent quotient test? Can you test intelligence to find out whether or not it's there? It can be tested. Living beings, living matter, let's say, is you can't test non-living matter to see if it will eventually become life over time. Again, that's unscientific. The processes of evolution are not testable, they're not repeatable, they cannot be proven with the scientific method. And so you look at a Bible verse like 1 Timothy 6, science falsely so called. You look at, and I referenced it earlier from 2 Timothy, those who are ever learning, I was wrong, I think it's 2 Timothy chapter 3, maybe verses 7 and 8. Those who are ever learning but never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. There's something to that you keep learning stuff, but you can't see what... Okay, we've done this a couple times in sermons. What's another term for truth? Y'all remember? Starts with an R, ends with eality. Truth is reality. It is what is real. Okay? So, you can test what is real. You can test what is, but science is limited in that way. Intelligent design cannot be tested. Let's think about that for just a minute. From the biblical perspective, I think it was last week, Hebrews 3:4. Every house is what? Every house is built by some man, but he who built all things is God. Is intelligent design testable and repeatable? Say yes. Yes, it is. It happens every day. If you have a design, it's kind of like what Reggie was talking about. Blowing something up, you've never come up with intelligent design after the explosion, have you? But you can build stuff every day. What are you doing? You're repeating a process. And you're coming to, let's say you have a certain blueprint, you order all the materials, you have your hypothesis. My thought is, my belief is that if I have these measurements laid out, if I have all these materials, then my conclusion will be, you know, fill in the blank. Well, what do you do when you're building the structure? You're testing out your hypothesis and you're coming to a conclusion. So it's the arguments of, from what I've found, the arguments of atheism make charges against creationists that they themselves are guilty of. Unscientific, wishful thinking. Who was it that referred to God as the spaghetti monster in the sky? You know, things like this, fairy tale stuff. And yet, we are told to accept as science that from a few pieces of bone we can reconstruct a body and know exactly what it looked like and how much hair it had, and etc. So you tell me which one is wishful thinking and unverifiable. Yeah, which one takes more faith to believe? Yeah. The origin of life from non-life has been tested and proven to be false, yet organic evolution is maintained by science. It's not just that they keep on testing and maybe we can falsify this theory. They will maintain that theory. I watched a video today with, it was an interview, another interview with Richard Dawkins. And it's just, it's done. The science is settled. Now, in regard to, is it intelligent design or is it what we refer to as Darwinian evolution? So they've run the tests, they've run the experiments, they've failed, and yet they will maintain the same conclusions even after their repeated failures. That's not scientific, that's not reasonable, that's not rational. That's not what sane people do. Any questions or comments on that? Claims. Yes. Yes. That is crazy. That is the definition of crazy. Here's all the evidence, and yet we reject that because that's not, the evidence is not an option. Intelligent design. Life prior to nothing. That's not an option. Okay. Yep. That's a good, Ashlyn makes a good point. If there is a God, what's next? What does that imply for me? Well, it means there's somebody higher than me. Absolutely. I think it was from the second or third video we did in, or class we did in here. Yeah, and it was from an atheist. Yeah. Yes. Well, and several of the points, as we've pointed out, are they're saying the same thing, they're just more wordy than the previous point. That proves nothing. Okay. So why theism? This is kind of where we'll end for the next few minutes. Why theism? True scientific thinking. And this is outside of religion, let's say. Just scientific thinking in general means following the evidence to any conclusion, and that's key, to any conclusion that is warranted by the data or the evidence. You follow the evidence, you come to a conclusion that is based on that evidence or that data. That's how it works. Even if it comes to a conclusion that you either never thought of or you hoped it wouldn't reach. I hope it doesn't go there, but well, it looks like it does. Here's the evidence, and we tested it, we repeated it, and this is the conclusion that we came to. So, I go back to this statement. I've got it written down here. We looked at this a couple weeks ago. Most people let what they want to be true dictate what they actually believe, and that's the problem. You can want something to be true all day long, or you can want something to be false all day long. But if it's not, you to be reasonable, to be rational, you have to let the conclusion that's based on evidence speak for itself. Any questions or comments on any of that? I think that's my last. Yeah. Any questions or comments on any of that? I think a thing to remember, and we'll talk about this when we start Genesis, Lord willing, next week, is It's interesting. Let's go to Genesis chapter 1. Let's do this. I know this has been a different type of class. We've used Bible throughout it, but as I said last week, the Bible is the final authority. There's no question about that. But I think if you were to ever get engaged in a conversation with a person about this, you know for yourself as a Christian, okay, the Bible's the final authority. That doesn't mean you can't talk about other things. That doesn't mean you can't take a different approach, a scientific approach, brush up on your information, know some very fundamental scientific truths like life doesn't come from non-life. But ultimately, we have to go back to Scripture. So, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And as you follow the text down through the end there, down through verse 31, you've got these days broken up. You see, what is it, 7 or 8 times in the creative process, it was good. An important thing to remember when you're looking at the, and this is one thing I'm going to do for our Genesis class too, is look particularly at the first 11 chapters and follow their, notice how those first, all the events and characters of the first 11 chapters, how they're verified throughout the rest of Scripture. Because what do people try to do with the earliest chapters of Genesis? We've talked about this. What do they try to do with the creation account and the flood? Long periods of time, or it's mythology. Kind of like the, what is it called? The Enuma Elish. You know, they're from various cultures, there are other creation accounts of different gods and different activities. Is there one called the Babylonian Epic? Trying to think of different things that I've read over the years. But anyway, you have all of these accounts in Scripture that verify what the earliest chapters of the Bible say. Okay, so for instance, 6 days of creation. I want somebody to turn over to Exodus chapter 20, please. And I want you to read Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11. Because there are at least two theories that are not 6 24-hour days. Creation was not literal six 24-hour day creation. Well, is there anywhere else in the Bible that would comment on that? Can we know for sure? Somebody read that, Exodus 20, 8 through 11. Okay, stop right there. In it, in what? Seventh day. Okay, so you're a Jew. You're an Israelite, let's say. You're sitting there at Mount Sinai. The law's been delivered. And Moses is going to come down and read it to you. You should work for 6 days and you need to rest on the seventh day. Could you imagine two Israelites saying, he doesn't mean days. That's just, you know. Anyway, keep reading. Huh. Okay, so I want you to work for 6 days and rest on the seventh day because God worked for 6 days and rested on the seventh. And I think a good way to, if you make notes in the margin of your Bibles, the word rested in the Hebrew means ceased. God didn't have to sit down and put His feet up and take a rest. His miraculous creative activity ceased after day 6. And so you've got time from the events that are recorded in Genesis chapter 1 to the events that are now recorded in Exodus chapter 20, and the Israelites are instructed to work on 6 days, rest on the seventh, because that's what God did. We are told today, and I've even heard this within churches of Christ, guys, that the days are not literal days, or that the, I love this one, well, you know, 1,000 years is as a day to the Lord. So it's great expanses of time. They'll reference 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. And that is not what that verse says. And if that's not what it says, then that's not what it means. It was either six, so this is kind of the, you know, we talked back, and this has been a few weeks ago. You guys remember the law of the excluded middle? A thing either is or is not. It's not anywhere in between. A thing either is or is not. God either created in 6 days and rested on the seventh, or He did not. So you have atheistic evolution. Okay, no God, no intelligent creation. But you also have theistic evolution. God exists. God started the whole creative process, but to fill in the gaps of Darwinian evolution, okay, God started it, but the evolutionary timetable is in there some way. Those are what are, and in fact, I've got a book in my library called Creation Compromises. That is a creation compromise. I believe in God. I believe that He started the creative process, but you have gaps of time in between the days, supposedly, they say, of creation. Somebody turn over to Mark chapter 10 and read verse 6. Because, okay, evolutionary timetable. How long has man been around, approximately? About 250,000 or so, it varies. But how long has everything been around? 14 billion years, right? So figure the difference between 14 billion and 250,000. That's not an insignificant difference, is it, Jay? No. That's a big difference. All right, somebody read Mark 10, verse 6. From the beginning of creation, God. Now, what's being discussed there in Matthew chapter 10? I'm sorry, Mark chapter 10, by the way, Jeremy. Marriage. So you turn the page from Genesis 1 to Genesis 2, you have the creation of the marriage bond, the marriage institution, and Jesus, a historical figure, says, from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. So is the beginning of a creation a gap of 13 billion, however many million, 100,000 years? Or is it, what day did God create man? Day 6? Which is it? Again, a thing either is or is not. So one of the things we're going to do with Genesis, like I said, is, I guess you would say, go through a process of verification, looking particularly at the early chapters of Genesis and verifying what's recorded there, particularly in Genesis 1 and 2, and what people like Jesus, Paul, Peter said about those early events. Anything else? The evening and the morning were the first day. Well, those are eons of time. Yeah. Well, Reggie, you just don't know science. I mean, that's... Right. They'll come up with something to not believe it. But that's a good point. And it repeats that throughout, doesn't it? The evening and the morning were the second day. The evening and the morning were the third day. It tells us what a day is. Well, it doesn't matter. If there's no God, who cares? Yeah. Yes. And we're going to, by the way, Genesis 1, we're going to notice the difference in those two chapters. Genesis 1 is creation in general. Genesis 2 is creation with a focus on the garden and man. Some people try to make it two different creation accounts. God messed up the first time, and so they have a recreation. We'll deal with that too.